Right. Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back. Welcome back to Passions Podcast. I'm your regular host, Latara, back today with Angel Young.
Hi, everybody, again.
Woo. Angel in the house. A much better angel than Passions' little angel girl.
Oh, my God.
Which we get an appearance from her this week. We get a couple of appearances from her this week. And I got to say, at first she was like up to her same old tricks, but she finally did something this week. So I was
finally.
Okay. But that doesn't make up for the fact that you basically caused Grace to have a miscarriage. So, let's get into it. Y'all, this week was, I don't know how you felt about it, Angel, but I was bored for the first three episodes. It was just so boring. I think I had a total of like a page and a half of notes. Like, there was nothing happening. It was all recap. It was super boring recap. It wasn't even exciting dialogue. Like, sometimes they have like funny lines, you know. When Tabitha and Timmy do the recap, it's funny.
It is.
When everybody else is doing their recap, it's like, okay.
Yeah, who cares?
So we talked about episodes 451 through 455, right? We're talking
yes.
About good. Okay, good, because that's what I watched. All right. So we're
gonna I watched that too.
We're going to start it with our troubled marriages, quote unquote, troubled marriages. It's really, we're starting with Chad's DNA stuff, but all of TC's suspicions are wrapped up in that, you know. So,
and Grace and Sam are wrapped in that too.
Grace and Sam, actually, both of them, they deserve each other, but we'll get to it. So the whole DNA thing is happening. Let's start there. They're in the little DNA computer room and they're waiting on these results. They're looking at the computer. Eve is just like dead faced and just silent. And everybody around her is like, what does it say? Whitney's like, Mom, what does it say? Chad, what does it say? TC's like, yeah, what does it say, honey? Who is Chad's mother? And she's not saying anything because Alistair elsewhere has this intern who's in the hospital and has erased the records. Like, he erased I think it was Eve and Julian's DNA samples from the database. So we see we see Eve sitting at the computer and she starts to cry, and Whitney thinks there's something really horrible on the screen. She's like, oh my God, this must be really awful.
Which all they have to do is just peek over and they'll find out.
It said in giant letters, no results found. Like,
this is a nice little back to my first episode here. The technology on that computer made me laugh so hard. Like, the way that they, like, the way, like, I swear to God that Windows XP was out that time, so there wouldn't be like any DOS looking stuff.
Yeah, it was at least Windows 98. Like, yeah. The way they acted like they needed Eve's expertise to decipher the results, and it literally just said in giant word art letters, no results found. So like, anybody could have looked and seen that that's what it was. But anyway, they're like waiting on her to decipher, and what does it say? What does it say? She's crying. She finally says it didn't find anything. There's no results found, and that's all because Alistair had it removed. Now, I want to say something. Stop right here and say something about Alistair and what Alistair says. Alistair says explicitly that Chad is Julian and Eve's son. He says that explicitly. Most of us know that that is not the
case. That's not the case.
So, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who doesn't know who exactly are his parents, but I think what the fuck is this? Like, I guess of course they didn't expect anybody to watch it like this 20 years later and be able to watch it the way we're watching it so analytically, But that's a huge plot point to rewrite. Enormous.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out why they rewrote the. I mean, I know why they rewrote it. But
I mean, yeah, it's kind of obvious because Don and later Charles and Brooke have chemistry, so they didn't want to ruin it. But well, actually, I did spoil it that yeah, Chad will be recasted in the next year or so. Oh, but yeah, yeah, so but and another recast is coming up, just so you know, very shortly actually.
Who's gonna recast?
Simone.
Oh yeah.
Simone, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. The actress had to do Jeepers Creepers.
I really like
the contract.
Her.
It was because I just found an interview with Lena Cardwell, and it turned out that like it was a breach of contract, and that's why she outright got fired from the show.
Oh,
because of that.
The
yeah.
original Simone.
The original Simone, yep.
She got fired. Oh, I did not
yeah,
know
because,
that
yeah,
because she
so
did Jeepers Creepers.
Because she could Jeepers. I think it was Jeepers Creepers 2. I think it was the second one because I don't remember
she
her
got
on the first
fired
one.
From. A daytime television regular recurring role to go do Jeepers Creepers 2, which
yeah.
I don't know if anybody saw Jeepers Creepers 2. I certainly did not.
Whatever one where she was in the bus, I remember. I was like, oh, it's Simone.
Oh my gosh, she's so gorgeous. I wish.
Yeah.
I wish we could have kept her. I really like her. But anyway,
yeah. But anyway
I like the I like the second Simone too. But anyway, yes, Alistair explicitly says that. He says, I thought I got rid of Julian's bastard son years ago. I thought we took care of this. Damn, Julian can't keep it in his pants, basically. Mm-hmm. So he says, Eve can never know that she is Chad's mother. He says this. So that's where we mm-hmm. are here right now.
That's where we are.
In the story, Chad and Whitney are brother and sister.
Half brother and sister, but still, same difference. Same difference.
I have a half sister. There is no difference. Like, like no.
No, but if you're like, if you had, I feel like it's for me, and I think it's coming from personal stuff, that if it comes from your mom, it's more icky than when it comes for your and not that it's right coming from your dad, but it's more icky because you came out of the same mom, like. I'm getting canceled.
You came out of the same vagina, so it's grosser.
It's so grosser. It's like, no.
I don't know why that's so funny to me. No, it's gross either way for sure. But I hear you. I see you. I understand, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, no, in the story right now, Chad and Whitney are brother and sister, and they're going to rewrite it in 2 years for some reason. So, mm-hmm. and this could have been really interesting, actually, you know, I actually kind of wish they would have continued with this, but mm-hmm. anyway,
especially where we're going with it, with certain aspects of it.
Yeah. So, after Eve says there's no results, Whitney gets real pissed. She's like, why were you crying? I thought for sure that there was something on the computer. Like, what are you crying about? And Chad speaks up and says, I know why she's crying. It's because she told me from the beginning not to get my hopes up. And she was telling me not to get my hopes up just because she knew that I would get hurt if I didn't find out who my parents were or if I was disappointed. And he says, Thanks for caring, Dr. Russell.
That's a reach.
Yeah, he's like, she cares so much about me that she is crying because she knows how much this meant to me. And, you know, it's sweet. It's sweet that that's where Chad's mind goes. It is. After she's been so fucking awful to him. Let us not, like, they're trying to rewrite Eve's relationship with Chad. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that it's becoming more tender and closer. I can appreciate it. But I will not let anybody forget the fact that when this boy came to town and for months afterwards, months onward, until he took a fucking bullet for her, she was calling him a street kid with no family. He's the worst kind of kid. He's the worst kind of boy. Uh-huh. I don't want him around my kids.
I remember this.
Yeah, no, she was really, really nasty. She was nasty to his face. Nasty about who he was. You don't even know who you are. You don't even know who your parents are. It's like he's an orphan, so chill the fuck out. So they are getting to a place where they're obviously in a much better place, but they're trying to like rewrite history to me with Chad saying, you know, thanks for caring so much, Dr. Russell. Like, it's only been a few weeks since she started. I don't even know if it's been a few weeks. It's only been, to me, honestly, a couple of days.
I mean, it's passion's time. It's probably like 2 days for all we know.
Yeah, since she told him it was okay for him to be friends with Whitney. Not even like, she was still like against them dating. She was like, but y'all can be friends. Like, that was during this DNA thing. When they got his DNA stuff, she was saying that to him. So anyway, he says, thank you for caring. And I wish I had a mother like you, basically. And TC's like, well, Sam says to TC, kind of in an aside, see, there's no way that Eve could be Chad's mother and you are crazy, basically. And TC's like, no, there's still a possibility. What if her DNA wasn't in the database? So then he says, so whose DNA is in the database? And the answer to this question is tacitly absurd. Okay. The answer to whose DNA is in the database is anyone who's ever been treated at the Harmony Hospital. And also all staff members at the hospital. Huh? What? I'm sorry, Angel. Have you
violation?
Have you ever given a DNA sample?
No.
The police have to get a warrant for that kind of shit. Like,
yeah, not in the hospital. I mean, for ancestry, but like, not for the hospital.
Right, and you have to like send it out. You have to spit in a tube. You have to do all of this stuff to get like your DNA sampled at the hospital. And I know your DNA is in all kinds of things, but you know how expensive it is to do like forensic science on like a follicle of hair or like one little piece of blood work. Like, it's really expensive. Why would they be running DNA tests on or taking DNA samples from everybody who ever comes into the hospital? It costs so much. It would cost so much money.
And then Eve also like straight up violates FERPA by saying that Julian went to the hospital a few years ago. HIPAA.
Yeah, HIPAA. So much FERPA's for students. HIPAA's for so much for the HIPAA laws, I guess. Eve, Doctor of the Year, Eve Russell. So yeah, she flat out said, because TC questions her about Julian's DNA. Would Julian's DNA be in the database? And she says, actually, yes, because he came here for a small procedure, a non-life-threatening procedure. Like, he came for a facelift. Like, I wonder what his small non-life-threatening procedure was, though. You know what I mean?
My mind went to places where it shouldn't be for that, because you know Julian is the type of guy who would he's like a womanizer, so I think something probably happened related to his womanization.
We'll see.
That's what I'm thinking.
My immediate thought was like a vasectomy, was that he would come and get a vasectomy and they took DNA sample from his balls. Oh boy.
Like, he got like, I'm thinking like he got caught with like, he like somebody caught him and they like shot him or something, but it wasn't like threatening, like maybe they shot him in the leg or something then.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not gonna say Julian needs to get shot. I'm not gonna condone violence, specifically gun violence, not on my platform. So anyway, let's keep powering through. I always keep going off on tangents on things that aren't really all that important, but just bug me about this show. So TC asks if Julian's DNA would be in the database. She says yes. So after all of the DNA fiasco kind of stuff, everybody leaves that room except for Eve and Grace. And immediately, you're right, this is obviously the best way to go. Immediately, Eve starts to break down. Like, she starts crying. She's really upset. And she basically tells Grace that it's weird, but she was kind of hoping that Chad was her son. She said, I was kind of hoping that a miracle had happened and my baby boy had walked right back into my life. And it honestly, it endeared Eve to me in a new way. I was like, that's actually really sweet. And then she starts talking about how she does think she needs to tell TC the truth because she owes it to her baby boy not to hide him away like he's some dirty little secret. I mean, mm-hmm. this epiphany of hers was so humanizing for me, for her. You know, I was just like, yeah, this thing happened and you deserve, you not only do you maybe owe it to your child, but you owe it to yourself to bear it all out and live in your truth and not have to be walking in fear your whole life that this secret's gonna come out. And your husband should be able to understand it, whether he's like a little, listen, TC should not be as all that mad about this. I personally, in my opinion, I know he will be because it's TC and they wrote him to be an irrational man, but this was before him. She had that baby before she met him. She didn't know he had an issue with Julian. Julian was nice to her. She didn't have an issue with Julian. So I don't know.
Just like with Grace and Sam, like that same, it's just kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Even though I want to admit that it isn't.
It is. It's very similar. I mean, there's a real life child walking around, a grown man walking around with Grace and Sam and Ivy's whole situation. But there's also a real grown man
walking around
somewhere, you know. So anyway, she has this emotional breakdown. She has this breakthrough saying that she was hoping that Chad was her son. She's going to tell TC the whole truth. Meanwhile, TC's out talking to Sam. And they like play basketball, but
they play basketball. Talk about chicks, man.
Yeah. We're talking about chicks, man.
Chicks, man.
That's what dudes do. They play basketball on the courts that are always at hospitals. They're at a hospital. Why is there a basketball court outside?
I mean, I assume that they were at like Harmony Community Park or Harmony High, but
it was right next door to the hospital. Well, and Eve and Grace were looking out the window of Eve's office, watching them play basketball. Like they're at the hospital.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think of like how the town is mapped to where would like a park or Harmony High would be, or like anywhere that would have a basketball court. But nope, I guess this is built at the hospital, so that way the male doctors can play basketball.
Somebody out there, because I would do it, but I'm spatially challenged. Somebody out there should draw a map, not the map that we have, because the existing map that we have is like no longer useful because there's all these new places that are not on the map. But somebody should draw a map based on the episodes as they watch them, like where things are, you know, like, well, here's the hospital, but there's a basketball court right next door. So here, put the basketball court on the map. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe. If you do it, send it to me, please. So they're outside playing basketball, talking about chicks, man. And Sam tells TC that he has to come clean to Eve about his suspicions about her. And me, I was like, why? Right?
Yeah.
Why? What for what reason? And Sam goes on to say that he needs to come clean to her because honestly, I don't know. I was confused. I honestly didn't understand his reasoning behind it. He was just like, secrets will kill a marriage. But like, it's not really a secret. I felt this way. It wasn't true. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, because like I was also thinking back to when, you know, the last bit of episodes I was on, like, it would explain his irrational behavior. Well, I mean, magic, but like, we don't know that. They all know that in universe. But it would explain like his irrational behavior towards Julian. It would explain like him like just being like this mean person. So yes, I get it in a sense like that he has to explain that to Eve, but at the same time, I don't get it.
Yeah, it just felt like a reach from Sam, but
and the writers.
But you know what? I guess it was because he's going through this whole thing after keeping a secret from Grace, and he's just like trying to keep his friend from making a similar mistake, even though it's a different kind of, it's a very different kind of secret, you know. So TC's like, yeah, you know what? Maybe you're right. So they go back into the hospital and go talk to the ladies, to the chicks, man. And when they go inside, Eve makes this whole speech about marriage and how it's built on trust. And then TC fully interrupts her. She's trying to tell him the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And he fully interrupts her and says, honey, you're not making any sense, which really pissed me off. But then he says she's not making any sense. And then so as she tries to explain, he cuts her off entirely again and says, well, actually, I know what you want to say. No, because you just said I wasn't making any sense. So you're confused. You're confused. So let me just say what it is I have to say. I hate this about TC. And the other men do this too, but I feel like they make TC do this a lot.
Yeah, he's the worst with that. Like, Thornton Chandler Russell needs to back off.
Is that his name, Thornton Chandler?
I just looked it up because my friend was like, what does TC stand for? And I have to look it up, and it's on the wiki, so that's his name. I don't know when they reveal it, but...
I think in an old, old episode of the podcast, me and Laura were trying to figure out what TC stood for, and I think I said, like, Thompson Carlson or something like that. I was like, I don't know what it stands for.
Kind of the same.
Yeah.
Thornton Chandler.
Yeah.
That might be from Hidden Passions. I'm not sure, so...
Tucker Carlson Russell. I hate him about as much as I hate Tucker Carlson, honestly, right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, he cuts her off. He tells her, I don't know what you're talking about, but I do know what you want to say. Shut up, TC. But he cuts her off and he says, you sensed my fear that Julian might be Chad's father. And he goes, yes, I did think. I did sense that. And she says, I think it's time for us to put everything out in the open. And he cuts her off again. And he says, you know, I was suspicious of you, Eve, and that was wrong. And then he starts talking about evil and harmony and how evil overtook him. And that's why he was suspicious of her. And, you know, there's just so much evil that Grace has been talking about the evil. And I really think that that's what's going on here. And then he goes, she's trying to, like, tell him the truth, and he keeps cutting her off. And then he apologizes to Eve. He says, you know, I'm sorry, Eve. I thought that you were Chad's mom and Julian was Chad's dad, and that was a crazy thing for me to think. The evil just got to me. And she keeps trying to tell him the truth, and he just keeps talking over her. And then he finally says, I would have killed Julian Crane, and then I would have spent the rest of my life in jail. And I think Grace says, you don't mean that, TC. You don't really mean that. And TC's like, no, I do. I would have murdered him with my bare hands, and I would have spent the rest of my life in jail or worse, you know. And then my girls wouldn't have a father, and my wife wouldn't have a husband, and, you know, and he goes and, down.
Whitney wouldn't have a tennis coach.
Oh my gosh, listen, I can't wait till we get to them, because all of a sudden tennis is so important. I haven't seen Whitney.
Oh my gosh, when we get to it,
we'll get to it. But yeah, anyway, so he doesn't let her speak. He talks about how he would have murdered Julian if all of that had been true. And then he laughs about how it could never be true because she's so perfect. Yikes. It's hard to tell a man the truth after something like that. I wouldn't be able to do it either, I don't think. Actually, me, myself, and I personally, I would have been so pissed off that he kept cutting me off that I definitely would have told him. I definitely would have, like, by the way.
I done fucked.
Yeah, I fucked before you were ever in the picture.
Yeah.
And I had a baby and he died, and it was really sad, and I'm really hurt and broken over it, but I hope this doesn't ruin our marriage.
Fingers crossed it does.
Yeah, I think he says, and one of the things he does say is that it would have poisoned their marriage forever if that had turned out to be true. So, yeah.
Just like Grace and Sam.
It's not really much of a marriage, though, in my opinion. TC sucks. And Eve's not great either. So maybe they are good for each other right now. Mm-hmm. So then Grace very annoyingly kind of needles Eve and says, Eve, didn't you want to tell TC something? And Eve looks at him and says, yeah, I did. I love you, honey. I love you so much. You're the love of my life. Yeah, I get it. This man just said he would murder somebody and doubled down when asked about it, right? Like, doubled down. I was like, no, I'm 100% serious. Like, I would leave here right now and I would strangle Julian to death. And let us not forget, earlier in this day, TC almost killed Julian. Mm-hmm. That already happened. So it's not too far-fetched. It's not so far outside the realm of reality. And anyway, also, now that I think about it, TC absolutely assaulted the shit out of Julian, and Sam didn't do shit.
No, he didn't.
He's so bad at his job.
Police Chief Sam.
So, yeah. Sam's bad at his job. He's the worst. Mm-hmm. God, he's so bad at his job. Later on, some more stuff happens. And I'm just like, God, he's so awful at his job. So, all of that happens. The guys leave again. Grace, once again, very annoyingly, tries to make Eve tell TC the truth. And Eve says to her, look, I thought Chad might be my son. And when I thought Chad might be my son, maybe it would have been a good idea to tell TC. But now that I'm pretty sure my son is dead and there's no chance of him walking back into my life, I think it's best that I just bury this again, because you heard him. He said our marriage would be poisoned forever. He would murder Julian. I'm doing this for him, basically, is what she's saying, you know, and for my kids. And, you know, I can't argue with the logic. I can't. I think it would be the right thing to just tell him the truth? Yes. Do I understand why she's choosing not to tell him the truth? Also, yes. And do I also think that that can also be a right choice? Yes. I think because we watch it knowing what we already know, it's very easy for us to say, oh, she should go ahead and tell him because it's going to come out. Mm-hmm. But in real life, if this was like a real scenario where you think you had lost your baby, all of this, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, no, this is a perfectly sound decision. And it's her, it's her story to tell. Yeah. She doesn't owe it to him.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't owe it to him. So she's not going to tell him. TC and Eve go home after having like a really nice dinner. They go and get a steak dinner, and apparently the TC thought the steak was tough. I don't know. And she was like, no, it was really tender. He was just complaining about the steak.
Just a complaint.
Yeah, he sucks.
Sucks.
But he once again just talks about how perfect she is. And then he goes and picks up a picture of Whitney, and only Whitney, y'all.
I think they knew that they were going to fire the actress who played Simone, because that should have been a picture of the both of them. I think I remember there was a picture of the both of them.
I feel so bad for Simone. I think it was just a picture of it was just a picture of Whitney after a tennis tournament, and that she apparently came in second. And so they're talking about Whitney, and he says, Whitney's so perfect. She takes after you. I'm so damn proud of this girl. She's so hardworking, and she takes after her mother, just like her perfect mother. Mother, perfect, perfect, perfect. She's perfect. You're perfect. She's perfect. You're perfect. Over and over and over again. No mention of Simone.
No. I mean, what's with the younger siblings? I feel like the younger siblings, except maybe Miguel. I think Miguel's younger than Teresa. Are the ones who get overlooked. Like, poor Jessica. Like, they...
Well, I would even say Miguel gets overlooked. I mean, Pilar is overlooking all her kids, to be... To be fair to Miguel.
It's not Teresa.
Pilar is not paying...
No, Paloma! I forgot about Paloma.
Yeah, Paloma's the...
Poor Paloma!
Listen, the most forgotten children are Paloma, Fancy, Pretty, and Fox.
Pretty Fox.
Yeah, the kids we don't even see.
The kid we all see.
Noah.
Because like I said, my only son, like, you got Noah.
You have a whole son.
You got a whole son that's out in college.
I don't know where he is, but he has missed 3 Christmases in a row at this point. He does not like coming home. So anyway, they talk about how perfect Whitney is, blah, blah, blah. Also, elsewhere, Sam and Grace have a little bit of stuff, so we'll talk about it really quickly. Sam tries to talk to Grace and says, like, we need to talk about our marriage, blah, blah, blah. And she tells him, you need to work through your feelings for Ivy. You need to work things out with Ivy and figure out what it is, how you feel there. Once you figure all of that out, then come talk to me. And that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. She's like, you got unfinished business with Ivy. I can tell. Go deal with that before we can deal with this person. Actually. So that's really all of their stuff. We do have a little bit of Ivy stuff to go through. It's really, really it's just small. some recap to let you know we're about to start talking about this tabloid situation again, basically, because it's been on the back burner for a while. Like, we haven't talked about it for a minute, so we just get a rehashing of the tabloid drama, how all of Ivy's secret came out at the engagement party, and how it was Rebecca who actually sent the tabloid, but she sent the email, but sent it from Teresa's computer. So that it will implicate Teresa in the leaking of this secret. But my favorite part.
Yes.
My favorite part was, at one point, Ivy's on the phone with her investigator, and he has nothing for her. He has nothing to tell her. He's like, I can't trace this, or I can't get anybody at the tabloid on the phone. Nobody at the tabloid will even talk to me, basically. Rebecca comes into the mansion and is just kind of doing her Rebecca thing, you know.
Doing her Rebecca thing.
Slinking around, making those sultry faces. Not really, you know, just doing her Rebecca thing.
That Andrea Evans knows how to do so well. I've seen her in 3 roles in my lifetime watching soap operas, and she just does that snobby look so well.
Yeah, that like kind of almost mischievous, but I'm better than you. Yeah, like, yeah, the one raised eyebrow, the little smirk.
She does it so well. That's probably why it took me a while to realize that Rebecca was a trash person, because I like Andrea Evans so much. She was she's such a good actress.
She is such a good actress. That's why I hate Rebecca so much.
Yeah.
It's why I hate Rebecca so much. So she's listening in on Ivy's phone call and thinking about how her plan's going to work out, right? Well, then Ivy catches her in the mansion, and she's like, she goes, Rebecca, you bitch. So good. Rebecca, you bitch. I feel like that's probably the name of the episode. I have like a couple other ideas, but that's a contender, because I love it. So she goes, I know exactly what you did. And then Rebecca's like, I don't. And you know how they drag these things out. Uh-huh. I know what you did. I know what you did. You're not going to get away with it. Blah, blah, blah. Turns out Rebecca has some furniture delivered to the mansion that, you know, it's not what if you were watching this for the first time and were didn't understand how soap operas worked, you might think that Ivy was on to Rebecca, but no, not at all. So she tells her, I'm still Mrs. Crane. I'm not going anywhere, blah, blah, blah. They do all of that. Eventually, Rebecca suggests to Ivy and says, you know, I have such influence over Julian, and I know you're worried that once he divorces you, that you're going to end up with absolutely nothing. Maybe if you agree to just step aside, I can influence him and make sure you get a very big divorce settlement, which I wouldn't trust. I wouldn't trust Rebecca as far as I could throw her. I wouldn't trust that. And Ivy's like, bitch, no, because I'm not going anywhere. I'm Mrs. Crane. I'm still gonna be Mrs. Crane. Like, stop it. At one point, she chases Rebecca around
the
She tells her she's gonna pull out her hair strand by strand.
Like, oh.
These blue bloods, like, running around this mansion.
It's like, Mitch.
I mean, yeah, so she chases around to try and pull her hair, but the investigator comes knocking, And he just walks right in.
where are like your butlers? Like, I know, to mention Andrea Evans's most famous role on One Life to Live, you have a whole butler who lets people in. Like, they don't just walk in. You have a whole butler. Like,
they let in any and everybody can just walk into this mansion. So he comes in.
Even though Alistair has a whole, and I don't know if you see in the background, Alistair has a whole security footage of like the outside of the mansion, the side of the mansion, and everything like that. I happen to notice that.
And like, yet, like I think I said last week and the week before that, I probably said this a bunch of weeks. While Alistair has every place bugged with video and audio, he seems to still not know things that he should know. That people are just saying out loud in his house. You know, like the fact that Rebecca is the one who sent the tablet, like he should know that.
Mm-hmm.
He should know that.
He should.
Yeah. They haven't hit it very well. She's been saying it constantly.
She says it constantly. Like, they speak out loud because that's just the way that they express their dialogue on this show. They just talk out loud to themselves all the time.
Yeah, so the investigator interrupts, tells Ivy he can't find out who sent that her secret off to the tabloid because he can't get anybody at the tabloid to talk to him. Rebecca says, you know, isn't there a way you can find out whose laptop the email came from?
Oh.
And that's when Ivy looks at her and goes, "How did you know it came from a laptop, Rebecca?" And I wish we would have just carried on with this. I really wish we would have just continued on with Ivy suspicious of Rebecca, because it's what makes the most sense.
Yeah.
It's what makes the most sense. Who has the most to gain from Ivy's secret coming out? It's Rebecca. So literally no one else has gained anything from this but Rebecca. Mm-hmm. No one. So anyway, we don't continue with that. Rebecca just goes, "Oh, you know, it's just technology, computer, desktop, laptop.
They're all the same to me. Cell phone,
CD-ROM, same thing to me.
Bluetooth speakers."
Yeah, and they just take that as like, okay, Rebecca's an idiot.
Take that as gospel. Okay, yeah. Rebecca.
Then Rebecca says maybe she can help, and she says, you know, does she say she knows someone at the tabloid?
I think she does.
Yeah, that's what I wrote. But then later they say something about planting someone at the tabloid, but maybe they mean the same thing, that they're going to use the person that she knows as a mole or something. So they're going to, this is the plan. They're going to plant someone at the tabloid, or Rebecca knows somebody at the tabloid who's going to act as a mole. Either way, it's the same result. And then Ivy asks Rebecca, because she's still suspicious, which she should be. Follow this. Go with your gut. Stay with this instinct. She says, "Why would you help me? What? And Rebecca says, "Well, we were friends, blah, blah, blah." And Ivy's like, "No, we weren't friends." And then Rebecca says, "Well, if they can drag you through the mud, they can drag me through the mud, and I'm going to be not Mrs. Ivy Crane. I'm going to be Mrs. Julian Crane very soon. So it's in my best interest to nip this leak in the bud, basically." So that's all of Troubled Marriages, I believe. You have anything to add?
Nope. I mean, the part of Troubled Marriages kind of slides into magic, Sue. So I have thoughts on that when we get to magic.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to all these couples. It starts with Shalice, but it really encompasses Shalice, Twitney, and Tarithan. Those are my names for all of them. I'm not married to Twitney.
Twitney.
I'm not married to Twitney. I don't love it, but what else could it be?
There were what they called Chadney.
Oh, and Chadney.
Huge shippers of Chadney. And I would, because, you know, I was watching this in real time, I was like, I can never ship Chadney because they explicitly said that they are related. So I couldn't ship them. You would think that I told them that Chad died in a car accident and they're never going to get back together because they came for me in the message boards.
You know what's interesting too about this is in this day and age where we have Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon kind of shows, a lot of shows are doing like incest storylines and they are like gross incest storylines. Like literally on Game of Thrones, Cersei and Jaime are twins, right? Like they know they're brother and sister.
Oh, they know.
they came out together. I mean, and then House of the Dragon. I don't know. Have you been watching that?
I haven't been watching it. I need to catch up.
It's not as good as Game of Thrones, in my opinion. And it's just, it's weird. Like, it's, I'm trying to, I don't want to, I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody. But anybody who is, like, a Game of Thrones fan knows that the Targaryens did a lot of inbreeding, you know, like that's just like, that was like their thing, was that they just married each other. So that's not a spoiler, but it's like extra weird in this show. It's like, I don't know. So anyway, so this storyline, our Chatney storyline is tame compared to what we are used to in 2022. You know what I mean? So now looking back at it, it's like, yeah, you know, let them. Oh God! Why not? I mean,
hey, look.
If the Lannisters can do it, if it's good enough for the Lannisters.
Oh my God! Like, and then the opposition of like those fans that I was a part of. I was like, once we're like, I don't want Chadney together. Somebody on a message board had like a passions themed banner. Banners back in the day on message boards, and it said incest is what's for dinner.
Oh my gosh
that made me laugh so much because I'm like oh God, because of this couple, that's why you're posting on there.
But I like that
they were anti-passions anyway. Like, I watched it because it was like, look, it was passions through all of its faults is my show. So,
oh yeah, that the thing is, I'll talk so much shit about Passions, but
yeah,
the show actually means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. I it's hard to explain to anybody who didn't watch Passions growing up. You know, that like this show really is really important to me, even though it's really kind of terrible and the people, the characters are terrible.
Oh yeah,
the plot is insane. But
it's insane.
I actually do have like a real like emotional connection to it, which
is and then like even like I know some of the, well, I don't know them, but like I talked to some of the actors on there. Like I don't bring her up as much because she wasn't in like that last episode, but this episode we were watching, Jessica came up. I was like, oh my God, it's a young Jane.
Who?
The girl who plays Jessica. Jane
Harlow.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, it's a young Jane. It's like,
we finally get a little bit of Jessica. But okay, let's power on, carry on. I've gotten off on a little tangent. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So Sheridan. Oh, we haven't even started this. Lord. Sheridan and Luis are at this Chinese restaurant. And they're sitting with Teresa and Ethan at this point. They're all there. And we're just continuing. This is just a continuation of Sheridan's love noodle broke. And then her fortune cookie says that she will never see children with the man she loves. And she's just having a real bad time at Sally Chin's House of Noodles. Okay. She's just having the worst customer experience a one person could have.
Yeah, she's gonna rate this a zero on Yelp, so.
Yeah, and everyone at the table assures her that it's nonsense, don't worry about it. But then she says, no, but you know, I've always felt like I would never find love, I'd never have kids. Like, this fortune cookie just reinforced all of my deepest, darkest fears. And that's rough. Yeah. Especially, we know Sheridan is in some ways mentally fragile. In some ways. I don't want to make it sound like she's just like a fragile person, because I think she's probably the strongest of the cranes. Because she's is connected to her emotions. But we also know that she is fairly easily influenced by negative messages, right?
Yeah.
So I really felt bad for Sheridan. Like, yeah. I mean, because everybody enjoys getting their fortune, and you read your fortune, and it's usually it's something silly, but sometimes it's something really cool and you'll keep it. But it's never like, you're gonna die on the 7th of November. Like, it's never like, yeah, you're never gonna have children, you're infertile. Like, come on, that would be tough.
Never anything like that.
Yeah, it would be weird. It would weird me out, to be honest, if I got, first of all, my love noodle broke, and the lady told me nobody's love noodle ever breaks, which I love noodle.
Lies.
I keep saying it's just cracking me up. But then after my love noodle breaks, I also get this fortune that says, like, you're never going to have kids with the man you love. Jesus Christ. So she's going through it. Everybody's trying to cheer her up, but it's not really working. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Julian has been manipulated by Hecuba to come into this Chinese restaurant for some Chinese food. Because he's carrying that bottle around that she's inside of. And he goes in, he orders the special. The Sally, the owner of this restaurant, she hates Julian because he apparently just doubled her rent. So yeah, she decides, oh, we're going to make his special extra special. And she serves the man cat food. And he starts like acting like a cat. It was hilarious. I love what they do with Julian, because he's not a traditional villain. You know, no. He's like a bumbling idiot.
Yes.
Who does bad things and is self-centered, but like, you can't help but laugh at him. It's so fun to laugh at rich people who are dumb and bad. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and I think I love that they wrote Julian that way. Like, he's rich, he's not a really great guy, but he's dumb, you know, so you can laugh at him. So yeah, he's acting like a cat. It's stupid. At one point, Hecuba puts a spell on him and says, go kill Sheridan and Luis. So he picks up a knife and starts to head over there, but then his
Sheridan Luis.
Yeah, his
kill
eyes turn.
Sheridan Luis.
His eyes glow orange like they do when we have evil Charity.
And TC, remember when he fought Julian, the same eye glow. Yeah.
But then Sally shows up with another plate of his fancy feast. With another plate of his cat food,
there, huh?
And he sits down and eats the food, because I guess the food overrides the evil. I don't know. And so who knew the cat food was the remedy for evil? Not me. But so he sits down and he starts eating his food or whatever. He starts getting drunk. He orders some red wine.
Red wine.
And because he asked for a wine list, and the lady was like, we only have white and red. And he goes, well, just bring me whatever has a cork, like no screw tops, a cork. So he gets real drunk drinking the red wine. It is at this point that Sheridan is like, I'm super uncomfortable. Like, why is Julian here? What's going on? Also, like, the love noodle broke. Then I had this horrible fortune. Like, this all just feels too wrong. So she is like, I need to go out and get some air. And so she and Luis actually go out and go for a walk. Luis follows her out. And at that point, Sally brings an extra strong love noodle back to the table for Luis and Sheridan to try, but they're gone. So, of course, Teresa's like, we'll take it.
And I feel like Teresa is a little extra in these specific, in the restaurant scenes. The Chinese restaurant scenes, I feel like she's a little extra. She was kind of getting on my nerves a little bit.
She was more than a little extra in not just the restaurant, at home, like at the park. She was ridiculous this week.
In these episodes, yeah, she was a little extra.
It was frenetic. It was like, girl, chill. So they get the love noodle, and Teresa is very confident that their love noodle would never break. And also, Sally made it extra strong, she said. So, you know, it should not break. Well, Hecuba has different plans, and she also zaps their love noodle and breaks their love noodle. Because, again, I don't think I said this, but I said it before in other episodes. Hecuba is the reason that Shuisse's love noodle broke in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't real. It was manipulated, and so was this one. But, of course, Teresa takes this to mean, like, oh, my God, this means we're not going to last, blah, blah, blah. But Ethan's like, well,
she cries like Serena on Sailor Moon, like she gets
But then Ethan like kind of talks her down and is like, yeah, but you just got a fortune that said that it would be you would marry the man. Oh, yeah, she got a fortune that said she had a fortune that said you will get married in the spring to the and the man you will marry is with you now.
It's with you now.
Yeah. And so she took that to mean it was Ethan.
Knowing what happens. Yeah.
Knowing what happens, you know, we all, anybody who knows, yeah. If you know, you know. Mm-hmm. But she took that to mean that it was Ethan because Chad was sitting at the table. Yeah, Chad was sitting at the table at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there with Ethan. And then Ethan makes a comment and says, and it certainly isn't my ex-father. So it has to be me. Anyway, they do a lot of back and forth. Sheridan and Louise, meanwhile, have gone on a little walk. And Sheridan feels super uneasy about the fact that Julian was at the Chinese restaurant and that her family's going to try to break them apart, blah, blah, blah. We know this. We've heard this. We've seen this over and over again. Louise reassures her that he's not going anywhere. There's nothing that her family can do. And then they start to kiss, and then Pachelbel's canon starts playing. Da, 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 da. Yeah. Pachelbel canon starts playing, and
because they probably can't afford Here Comes the Bride.
And then flower petals start to float down from the sky, and Sheridan goes, it's magic. And then like Air on the G-string starts playing, and it's like really all this beautiful music, you know. And then they realize that there's some newlyweds in the park having their pictures taken, and that's why there's like the music and the flower petals or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they share a glass of champagne with these newlyweds. It's very sweet. Sheridan's still super freaked out about the Chinese restaurant stuff, though. And Louise, again, is like, all that matters is our love. Fine. That's
okay.
What they keep saying to each other. Sheridan keeps saying, I'm worried about the fortune cookie. And he keeps saying, all that matters is our love. And I love you. And I'm not going anywhere. So we're going to stick with them really quickly and finish them up. Finish up Shuisse, because that's really it. We're almost done with them. They go back to the Lopez Fitzgerald home. And at one point, Pilar pulls Luis into the kitchen and kind of tells him, you know, Sheridan's been through a lot.
Dishes. That's why.
He's like, Sheridan's been through a lot. And if you're not going to actually commit to her, you need to break it off, basically. And he says, no, I love Sheridan, and I don't want to break it off with her. I do want to commit to her. And she says, well, you loved Beth too. It's like, Pilar, why are you bringing Beth into this?
Who's Beth? I don't know who Beth is.
You don't know who Beth is?
No, I know who Beth is. Yeah, yes. Who's Beth? Like, who's this Beth person? I don't know who Beth is. I'm more committed to Sheridan.
Yeah, but why bring Beth into it? He's not with Beth anymore and hasn't been with Beth for a long time. So I don't know why Pilar thought to bring Beth into it. I understand her telling him, you know, Sheridan's been through a lot, and what she says to him is, I don't want to see Sheridan get hurt, because she thinks of Sheridan as her own daughter, you know? And so actually it's really sweet for her to be trying to look out for Sheridan. Mm-hmm. But Louise says, you know, no, I do want to make a commitment. But Sheridan walks in on a portion of this conversation that sounds like Louise is going to break things off with her. Mm-hmm. Because she walks in on Pilar saying, if you don't want to commit to her, you need to break it off, basically. And at that point, what I do like here is that the writers, and I think they understand that we already spent 300 episodes with Louise and Sheridan having their back and forth and being confused about their feelings. We did all that. So anytime they're about to have a misunderstanding, I love that we're like, we're going to clear this up right the fuck now. We're going to clear it up right now. So Louis sees her, says, I need to talk to you. You know, he sees that she looks a little upset, and she starts going in saying, I understand if you don't want to be with me. That fortune cookie really freaked us out, blah, blah, blah. Like, I understand. We can just be friends. And he's like, you really got it wrong. It's not that I don't want to be with you. I just don't want us to rush into marriage necessarily. But he says to her, I want to spend the rest of my life with you. I want to marry you. Maybe not today, but when the time is right. And she agrees. She says, oh, and she's over the moon. She's overjoyed. And she said, yeah, when the time is right, when the time is right. So they kiss, and that's kind of where we ended with them. We'll pick back up with them with the Teresa Nathan stuff. So let's get to Teresa and Ethan. So they're at the Chinese restaurant, and Whitney and Chad, like, join them at the Chinese restaurant right after the love noodle breaks. And then Whitney really spent some time trying to get Teresa to come back to reality. Like, she's like, she spent some time trying to just tether her friend back to the earth, because Teresa's like spinning out a little bit. And she tells her, you know, open up another fortune cookie and it'll cheer you up. Like, let's open up another fortune cookie. And actually, this is when she gets the fortune that says, you will marry in the spring and your husband is with you now. And so she gets excited. Mm-hmm. She's really excited about that fortune cookie. She's like, okay, so the love noodle was wrong. And this is, you know, she's back to her, like, flitty, flighty, it's fate self.
Yeah, she becomes a balloon and just, like, rises in the air. And Whitney's trying to, like, wrangle her down.
Whitney gets a fortune cookie that says, you will soon experience the love of a brother. And then she's like, that's weird, I don't have any brothers. And then, like, well, could you, maybe your parents have secret children, ha 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 ha, you know, they all laugh, you know, because it's a fortune cookie, you know, who puts any stock in that? Then Chad opens one that says, the love you give will destroy the one you love. And I was struggling to even decipher that one, honestly. I guess it was just like, being in love with Whitney is also going to destroy her. But it'll destroy him too, you know, when they find out they're siblings.
Now I don't know how far ahead the writers have, like, long story. So I was thinking of another thing that might pop up, but I don't want to say what it is.
Yeah, and I, you know, I, like you said, I don't know how far they thought things through, you know. And I wonder if the incest storyline, I wish I could talk to some writers, because I wonder if this incest storyline was supposed to continue, but there was, like, an issue with NBC, or, like, with the fans were like, this is disgusting, like, we're boycotting this show unless y'all change this, you know. Maybe that feels like something that, like, people who watch daytime television might get a little in the 90s and the early 2000s might be a little, like, bent out of shape about it. So maybe they ended up having to change it for, like, the censors or whatever.
Because I know some of the magic stuff they have to change for reasons, so it wouldn't surprise me if they had changed the incest storyline.
Maybe that's why they did it. I don't know, but some of the fortunes are good, some of the fortunes are bad. And my thing here is, there's Teresa decides to kind of pick and choose, and it's like, girl, you can't have it both ways. Either it's fate or it's not, I feel like, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're so diehard about it's fate, then the love noodle should have been like, okay, that's it. you know, because she saw one picture of her and Ethan and was like, oh, we're meant to be.
We
were together when we were little kids.
Which that came out of nowhere, and I was just like, no, Pilar was so dead set. I was like, no, you didn't know Ethan. Picture. Yeah. Okay, I guess you did know Ethan.
One picture that she didn't even remember taking, and now they're meant to be together. But the love noodle, which you put a whole lot of stock in, breaks, and you're not gonna really
put more
take that into account. And then also, she She later on makes a comment about Sheridan and Louise not getting married because their love noodle broke. She says, well, it can't be Sheridan and Louise because their love noodle broke. They can't, they're not going to be able to be our double mm-hmm. wedding people, whatever. Anyway, it's all stupid and convoluted. It's, but
yeah,
eventually all of these people leave this restaurant and they meet up at the park where Sheridan and Louise are also at the park with these newlyweds, and they all talk about weddings. And then Teresa starts having these weird fantasies about having a double wedding and who's going to be the other couple at her double wedding. And she says it can't be Sheridan and Louise because their love noodle broke, but it also mm-hmm. can't be Whitney and Chad because they haven't been on a date
on their
yet.
First date yet.
But then she says, well, it could be them because they don't need to go on a date. They know they're going to get married anyway. She's a mess.
Teresa,
a lunatic. It's been a minute since I called her a lunatic.
I need to you know, massage my temples because it's just so much that Teresa is going through. It's Chad and Whitney. No, it's this, it's that, it's that. Even have to pull her down from the balloon that she became. Like, it's so, like... At yeah. times, like,
she's a lunatic, lovable but lunatic, yeah. Lunacy. This is,
I know you mentioned this in past episodes, but how old is she supposed to be?
I think at this point she's 18.
She's
18.
So a lot of that stuff makes sense then because she's still a teenager.
She's a child. She's a child. She's a child bride. Because she and Whitney just graduated high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is like their first year out of high school. So she would be about 18. That is my assumption. Which again makes Miguel like 17, 16, they're 17. Mm-hmm. And I think I had a conversation with somebody who was like, he's grown. And I was like, no, he's a child.
And yeah, I know he's younger than Teresa.
Yeah. So, eventually all of these couples split off and go mm-hmm. their own way. You can go your own way. Go your own way. So
Chad and Whitney.
Let's follow Chad and Whitney because we can finish them up very quickly. They go for a walk down by the water and Whitney is trying to cheer Chad up. He's feeling a little down because he felt like the DNA test was the best chance he had of finding mm-hmm. out who his parents were. So it's understandable that he's like feeling a little disappointed, not just a little disappointed, very disappointed, and feeling kind of hopeless in this search, right? Saying, you know, maybe I'm never going to find out who they are. And she's trying to cheer him up. And finally, they start talking about the two of them becoming a we. We're an us. It's the two of us mm-hmm. together. We are together, right? Like, they really kind of make it official. Uh-huh. And then Chad asks her, he says, oh, I just realized we haven't been on our first official date. And so he asks her, he says, Miss Whitney Russell, it would make me, I didn't write it down, but it was really like, he really gave her like a little speech. It was a really like, mm-hmm. it would be my honor to take you out this next Friday night or sometime like tomorrow night to go see Along Came a Spider, which is a little cross promotion there because I believe that's a Universal movie, but
mm-hmm.
so it'd be NBC Universal, you know. So she's like, oh, I would love to, but I can't. And he takes that to mean that she doesn't want to date him. He's like, oh, I guess I read you wrong. Sir, no, you didn't. Y'all been making out all day long. You didn't read anything wrong. She said, I can't. Not that I don't want to. I can't. And then she says, oh, I have an early morning tennis match, so I can't be out late, blah blah blah.
Which, first of all, tennis?
Since when, girl? Since when do you play tennis? I haven't seen this girl on a tennis court in months.
I haven't seen her. I haven't seen her in a tennis court since the first episode. Let's be honest.
No, I saw her again. It was probably about 100 episodes ago, when she had a tournament and Chad went to see her play and she got a little distracted and she lost.
Oh, right. That.
Yeah. That was the last time I saw her. That's the last time I've heard of her playing tennis, honestly. So even TC and Eve haven't said anything about it until these episodes mm-hmm. for a long time. They just and for a while because TC that's all TC would talk about. Whitney has to focus on her tennis. Whitney has to focus on her tennis. And then they stopped talking about it. So I was like, good, all right, we don't care about this as much anymore. But apparently we do. Because this bitch is booked. Okay. She is booked busy and blessed. Solid. She's going through her date book and he's like, okay, well, what about next weekend? And she's like, oh, I'm going to Nashville. And he's like, well, what about the weekend after that? She's like, oh, I have to go to Boston and then I have to go to blah, 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 and all of this tennis stuff. And so she says, you know, I understand if you don't want to date me. I understand, like, I'm sorry, you know, but tennis does come first, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, of course I want to date you still. Like, we'll just have dates in the mornings. We'll go for breakfast.
Morning dates, yes.
Okay. It was sweet. But, like, that's kind of where they ended. They end up going back to the Russell home. And Chad has a conversation with Eve, just the two of them, where he talks about how he, if he had a mom, he wishes she was like Eve. He says if she was half as nice as Eve was, then he would be happy, basically, just based on how he's seen her mm-hmm. with her own daughters. And then they talk about her having a son. That was weird and forced. Mm-hmm. But
and then TC said, bitch, where's my sandwich?
Yeah, that was fucked up. Hey, where are those sandwiches?
Bitch, where my sandwich?
And they had just got home from dinner. They had just got home from dinner. Why is she in there making a sandwich for you? I would have been like, you can come make your own motherfucking sandwich, asshole. Especially after the way you treated me today. Fuck you. Uh-huh. Fuck you. No,
you this baloney.
You come get this sandwich if you want it. Shit. But anyway, that's really the end of Chad and Whitney. Let's finish up with Teresa and Ethan and Sheridan. They go back to the Lopez Fitzgerald home. We already talked about how Sheridan and Luis had their conversation about, mm-hmm. you know, we want to get married, but when the time is right, right? Well, meanwhile, Ethan and Teresa are in the living room and they're talking about they're ready to start planning their wedding. They need to start planning the wedding, right? So Teresa goes to get her laptop and Pilar stops her from bringing the laptop in. She's like, you're sure? Now you're sure that those documents about Ethan are deleted from your computer? And Teresa's like, yes, they are deleted, I'm sure. Then she puts the laptop down and goes off to get something. And before she comes back, it like beeps. And Ethan says something to Sheridan, who's like talking to him at this point, something to Sheridan about how the laptop is state of the art because Ivy gave it to her, to Teresa, and nothing ever gets deleted.
I wish my computer worked like that.
Your fucking computer would fill up with bullshit if nothing ever got deleted. Like stuff that you wanted to delete, it stays there forever. Sorry. And that's state of the art. You know how much shit you would have to sift through to get to the stuff you need after having your computer for a year? Like no. That is so absurd, and it absolutely is absurd for 2001 or 2000, whatever year this is. I think it's 2001.
I think, like, it is 2001, yeah. And like, I know I kept saying 2002 the last episode, but it's really 2001.
That's some bullshit, because you know how many fucking projects I had to start entirely over in 2007? Like, I had to start all the way over years after this was recorded and released. Like, because my computer didn't save the shit. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, no, this is, no.
I had to learn Control S or Command S so quickly. Like, do-do-do-do-do-do. So that way I could save my file while I finished, like, every paragraph.
Most things auto-save now, and I still Control S constantly.
Oh, me too.
Constantly. It changes you. Something fundamental changes within you when you spend all night writing a fucking paper and then you lose the fucking paper and you have to do the whole thing again. Something changes within you, and I am fundamentally a different person than I was after that happened to me. And I Control S everything all the time, even though I know everything's auto-saving. I know it is, but
you don't trust the auto-save.
Especially sometimes after I make a really important change, I'll just go ahead and do it because it's like I don't want to have to redo this. Even because sometimes the autosave isn't keeping up in real time. You know, if it crashes, it comes back up. A lot of it's there, but like the last little bit won't be there. You know. So anyway, this computer never deletes anything. So she thinks she's deleted the files, but they are not actually deleted. They're apparently starting to just pop back up by themselves out of nowhere. Oh, this show
ghost
so
files.
Oh, this show's so stupid. So it beeps. He looks at it. Teresa tries to get to the computer because she thinks, oh no, what do you mean nothing ever gets deleted? You know, she's like, he can't see the files. She tries to get to the computer. He kind of stops her, looks at the computer, is like, I can't believe you didn't tell me.
And then at the end of the episode, and I had the screenshot, all the files that pops up and says, health article, filing, girl stuff, Ethan's love, .. silver travel, journal note, SB letter, mom list, and screensaver. That's all that comes up in the file recovery. Nothing to indicate, except maybe Ethan's love, that this article is there.
Yeah, because the file's name that was on her computer that she deleted was Ethan's Secret. That was the file name. That's just a dumb file name.
But the one is called Ethan's Love, and she's not looking at the computer. Which, going back to people not looking at computers in these episodes.
Well, he wouldn't let her look at the computer. She was trying to get around him, and she couldn't get to it, and because he was just kind of being playful. He was being really playful with her, but then he says, "I can't believe you didn't tell me. You knew all along, and you didn't tell me. You know, I can't believe you never said anything." Blah blah blah. And then he finally is like, "This poem you wrote." And y'all, it's in this fucking poem. And I took,
it's in Comic Sans.
I took a screenshot. I took a picture because I was watching it on my TV, but I took a picture of this hilarious poem. And it is in Comic Sans, which I was like, oh my God. And my niece was watching with me. My niece actually recently moved in with me and we're having a blast. But, she was watching it with me, and that was her immediate, like, she was like, Comic Sans, because she's 19, so she definitely is like, we don't do that anymore. But y'all, this poem called My Ethan by Teresa Lopez Fitzgerald, that's what it says. My Ethan, the center of my life, the reason for my being, his smile, his laugh are food for my soul, his touch, his kiss are all I need. Ethan is happiness. Ethan is my love for all my life. That's definitely a teenager wrote that.
Yeah.
A teenager definitely wrote that.
Look, I probably would have wrote something like that about the person who I had a crush on. So
I definitely wrote some stuff like that about some boys that did not deserve it.
Okay, so I did.
That did not deserve it. Y'all, I found my journals. This is why. Let me be clear. I would love to continue journaling, but I am so embarrassed when I go back and read my journal entries that I will never journal anymore. I used to journal a lot, and I found my old journals from like middle school and high school, and oh my God, they were so cringe induced. Like, I was like, I cannot believe some of the things that came out of my mind and I wrote down. Can't believe it. No, that stuff needs to stay in my head. I don't want to. So I can't journal anymore because it's embarrassing. Not that it's bad for other people to journal. I actually found it very cathartic and very, like, in the time that I was doing it, it was good for me, and I should have been doing it. It was part of my therapy. So yeah, I should have been doing it. Too. But going back and reading it was traumatic for me. So I was like, oh yeah, no, I need to stop writing stuff down for people to maybe find in subsequent years. But anyway, yeah, a teenager wrote that shit. Ethan is happiness. Ethan is my love. Ugh, girl. Ethan is not happiness. Happiness is bacon and cheese. Charcuterie.
That sounds good.
Charcuterie. Happiness is charcuterie. A good charcuterie board, some wine. Yep. That's what happiness is. She doesn't know yet, though. She just doesn't know.
No.
All right. So we're going to continue on. So Ethan, Teresa, they start talking about, after he reads this poem, they start talking about planning their wedding. And then they start planning the most extravagant wedding, which is insane to me. They start talking about having the reception at the country club and hiring this like world-class pastry chef for the wedding cake and blah, blah, blah. Pilar, meanwhile, is sitting there with her little like notebook trying to write stuff down. And she just stops writing, is like, finally tells them, y'all can't afford this. We can't afford this. Like, you'll have to cut your budget in half, basically. And then that's when Teresa gets it in her head. She's like, I know how we can cut the budget in half. We'll have a double wedding with Sheridan and Louise. And so she really pushes them to have a double wedding with her.
Yeah, and the fantasy kept coming back. Like, I know it keeps coming back. Like, that fantasy, that weird fantasy of them walking down the aisle. Louise
keeps saying to her, we're not ready to get married. And she keeps saying, yes, you are. But Sheridan is in the background kind of smiling. And that's really where we ended. She doesn't actually say that she wants to have a double wedding, or whether she wants to or not. But that's where we ended with them. And we're going to have to keep going because we have talked for so long. Mm-hmm. All right. But before we get into the best part, y'all, the best part of the week, the best part of the week, this was the best part of the week. But before we get into the best part of the week, I got to say shout outs to my patrons. So thank you to, once I get it pulled up, thank you to Moona Shea, Marcus, Erica, Brelin, Lisa, Zach, Sid, Randall, Sarana, Ashley, Shannon, Hannah, Camelia, Amanda, Samantha, Amy, Eric, Jamie, Fantasia, and S. Thank you all so very, very much. You're the best. I love you all so, so much. You make my life worth living. You light up my life. Yes. You give me strength to carry on. You give me strength to carry on this podcast. So thank you all very much. And remember, if you would like to become a patron, you can go on over to patreon.com/passionspodcast and sign up for whatever tier fancies you, or you fancy. There it is. You fancy. Angel, in this moment, do you have anything you want to share with the peoples?
Yeah, the way I share my socials now at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can follow me on Twitter at Tornado Song. I have a podcast called Sarah and Angel Talk About Things, where one of us talks about something that one of us watched and the other one didn't. Our most recent episode, because I've been busy, is a Brokeback Mountain retrospective. We both watch it, so that means it's a retrospective. So that's out now. Whenever you get podcasts,
nice.
You can follow me on Instagram at angel.young24. I am private on Instagram because I work at a school. So if you happen to follow me there, just send a request and I will kind of, you know, send you a message and then I will accept you.
All right, and I'll link that in the description below as well. So we're going to. We're gonna carry on here. We're gonna sally forth. I guess that works. We're gonna carry on and get into magic, y'all. Oh my god.
Magic.
Listen, when I say this week was fucking boring, it was so boring. So I mean, y'all probably can tell by the podcast. The podcast is probably not as exciting as I feel like it normally is. The week was super boring, but man, did they knock it out of the park in these last two episodes with the magic stuff. Out of the park. It was so good. So we start with, I mean, the magic stuff starts boring, but then it gets crazy fast. The kids, they go to the book cafe to strategize how to get Charity back. But Miguel is not into it. He's like, I don't know how this can help. What good will go into the book cafe do? He's like, I followed the instructions to the letter and she's still not back. And he's talking about how he opened the box and the light and destroyed Hecuba, except he didn't destroy Hecuba. Mm-hmm. Hecuba's still alive. So obviously you didn't follow the instructions to the letter, Miguel. You didn't, you jackass, because he closed the box. Charity was coming back. We saw Charity. She was being animated or not reanimated, but like she was being, what's the word when all your particles come back together?
I guess reimagined? I don't know.
I don't know. She was coming forth in the light. And then he closed the box before she was fully and completely back. So you did, you're an idiot. He's an idiot. I can't, ugh, he's so stupid. So anyway, he says he's
I mean, does it kind of run the family? I don't know.
He said, although I think Teresa's very smart. She just.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about the girls, though.
Oh, just the boys.
Just the boys.
Yeah. So he says, you know, what's the point of going to strategize at the book cafe? I don't know what that's going to do. Like, but also, what is your plan, Miguel? You know, if you don't shit on everybody else's plan to try and do something, what are you going to do? You know, but anyway, Reese finally says, well, we're going to go into the book cafe and check out the new CD-ROMs.
PC CD-ROMs.
We're going to check out the new CD-ROMs, the new Britannicas, to see if there's anything new that can help us in here. They got a lot of new CD-ROMs. So,
at the book cafe.
At
yes.
the book cafe. I guess they have computers there for you to use the CD-ROMs.
Maybe it's .com, like on Days of Our Lives. Who knows?
I don't know. But so, Miguel then agrees to go into the book cafe. They sit down. The transitions were really bad here. There were none, honestly. But they sit down and talk to Timmy and Tabitha, who are also at the book cafe, lamenting the fact that they've lost Hecuba in a bottle. Hecuba in a bottle, baby. Nope, not gonna work. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. I guess you could do, I'm a witchy in a bottle, baby.
Get me out of here, baby.
Get me out of here, baby. So I can wreak havoc, baby. Okay. So they're lamenting the fact that they have not found Hecuba in a bottle. When the kids come in, and bring Tabitha up to speed about Charity for some reason. Whatever. Then Reese questions Tabitha about her ankle because, you know, she hurt her ankle in the mine shaft. And he says, you know, I was only wondering because the mud on your shoes look suspiciously like the mud in the mine shafts. And Tabitha says exactly what I said, which is mud. What are you talking about, idiot? Like, unless the mud in the mine shafts is like blue, or maybe it's just like they have that red clay up there specifically, mud is mud. Like, it's going to look the same. So you're not going to tell me that it looks like a specific kind of mud. That's silly. He talks about Timmy may come into life and maybe when he saw that it was real. And she's like, no, you're just a kook, Ross. and then she gets on out of there. Later, Kay, again, like I said, the transitions in these, the kids stuff was really bad. Nothing. There was no transitions. Kay is just randomly telling Simone that she sold her soul to get rid of Charity. She's like, I sold my soul for this to happen. Like, and I want, and she will, in Kay's defense, she's saying that she wants to help and get Charity back. And Simone tells her, oh my God, Kay, I can't believe you sold your soul. Like, we need to get it back for you. You need to pray and ask God to give you your soul back. And she's like, and Kay's like, God's not going to listen to me. But Simone's like, you better get on your knees right now. So Kay gets on her knees in the middle of the book cafe. And starts to pray to get her soul back. And she tells God, if you give me my soul back, I promise I'll be good. And it is at this point that Tabitha, who has taken Kay's soul, she has Kay's soul on a chain around her neck. She begins to be pulled back to the book cafe after she and Timmy leave by the soul. At first I was confused. I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, I was
like
too.
Wind blowing. I was like, what's going on? But it was that the chain, the soul was pulling back to Kay because God was trying to give it back to her. And Tabitha is being pulled and choked back. Kay eventually stops saying her prayer because she says, see, it didn't work. God doesn't want to talk to me. But my thing was, why didn't Tabitha, I guess she just wanted to hang on to the soul, but Tabitha knew that she said, oh, Kay must be praying to get her soul back. just take it off. So she, I know you want to keep it, but if it's choking you and pulling you and it's going, and you're going to be found out that you're a witch, just take it off. And she wouldn't take it off, which was weird to me. So, Kate does not get her soul back, but that's, it's encouraging to see that she could pray and get it back. Mm-hmm. And her soul does want to come back to her. Meanwhile, Reese and Miguel come over. They see her praying. This is before she stops praying. They see her praying, and Miguel says, "Oh my goodness, that's a good idea," because they think she's praying for charity. "We should all go to the church and pray." And Simone says, "Kay can't go to church, Miguel. Kay can't go to church, Miguel." And the witch is also a contender for the name of this episode. "Kay can't go to church, Miguel." And he says, why can't she go to church? And Simone makes up a silly little lie, says, well, it's because she has a cold and it's really drafty at the church and she shouldn't go to the church. And Miguel's like, well, we can just pray here. So the boys split off. They find their own private spots in the book cafe to go pray. Miguel says his prayer. He starts praying to bring charity back, and the angel appears to him.
And he's like, "Hey, what's up, y'all?"
The angel appears to Miguel and tells him that Charity is still alive and that she's fighting the evil, and there's much evil to fight in harmony. And then Miguel says, "How do I get her back?" And she says, "You must have faith, Miguel." And then she just disappears.
She's because like, bye, she's y'all.
Because she's a bitch. I can't stand this angel. She sucks, man. I really can't.
From the very first episode where she's like, "You must wake up, Grace. Wake up, Grace."
She sucks. She just doesn't ever give anybody the information they need. And she is so vague, and it's irritating.
She's a troll.
She's such a troll. Yeah, she is.
An actual troll.
Yeah, she absolutely is. And so she just disappears. Miguel's like, what? And then later, so that's still in his mind, right? Mm-hmm. Pilar shows up.
Which, finally, when did that happen?
So. Pilar shows up. She says she was just coming by to get some coffee, and she had to go on her way home. She was just coming by to get some coffee. She happened to see her son was there, so she wanted to check in with him. And she was like, "You know what? But since you're here, I want to spend some time with you." And which is good. Finally, Pilar is like, "Yeah, I'm gonna spend some time with my kid that just came back from being in hell and literally just came back from being dead." Mm-hmm. Miguel was dead, y'all. I don't know how to express how I feel about this, but Miguel was dead. Miguel was dead on that mountain, on Fuck Mountain, and when there was an avalanche. And Miguel was dead when he fell out of hell. He was dead. I think he died another time. Miguel is a zombie. He keeps dying and coming on back.
Zombie Miguel.
They really should have leaned into him being a zombie, because he keeps coming back from the literal dead. So she wants to sit and actually catch up with her kid. Good on you, Pilar, finally. But he's like, "No, mama. We were actually just about to leave. I really want to hang out with my friends. We're figuring out what we're going to do about charity, blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "You really should just go home. And I want you to know I love you. And tell Luis I love him. And tell Teresa I love her." And then after she leaves, he tells the kids, he says, "Well, I'm going back to hell. And I wanted to tell my mom I loved her one last time, because it might be the last time I ever see her." Oh. These kids go back to Charity's room. Go back to the Bennett house. They go to Charity's room. Miguel prays that same kind of similar prayer that Father Lonergan did to Gates of Hell. "Open up, please, God. Show me the evil. Show it to me. Make yourself known." Nothing happens. And then that angel appears to him again. Is that what happened?
No.
It does. She doesn't.
Not for Miguel.
She doesn't. So it doesn't work. And then he turns to Kay and says, "I have this gnawing feeling that there's something you're not telling me," basically. Like, "Is there anything else I need to know about the circumstances surrounding how Charity got to hell?" And the thing he kind of probably needs to know is that she sold her soul and just let Charity go to hell. I mean, she didn't push her in, but she didn't. And she did. In Key's defense, she tried to pull her out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to be, again, I'm Team K because I didn't push her in. I tried to pull her out, but I'm not going to hell for charity. Like,
nope,
I'm not gonna go to hell for the bitch. Like, that's a little far. I mean, so it far, is my fault she's there.
I mean, I barely know this cousin that came up suddenly a few years ago, so I'm not doing anything extra for my cousin.
Yeah, so I mean, it was wrong that she sold her soul, but she didn't know that that's what was gonna happen to Charity either. To be fair to Kay, she didn't know that the specifics surrounding it. She just made a deal with Hecuba to get rid of Charity, but anyway, so she says no, nothing you need to know, nothing that concerns you, nothing you need to know about the circumstances surrounding. She went to hell. What do you want me to say? The demons took her. And so he prays that prayer again. He again asks God to open the portal to hell, and he taps into his love for Charity, is what he says. More of his love for Charity, and it opens up, and he immediately is about to like rush in, but then a giant hell worm with arms, I can't describe it any other way, a giant hell worm that also had tiny arms, long but skinny arms, comes surging out of that closet. Yes. And it grabs Miguel and it's pulling him into hell. Right. And it is at this point that it actually starts to like eat him.
It devours him.
It starts to eat him. His whole lower half of his body is in this thing's mouth. And y'all, it is massive. This thing is huge. It kind of looks like a skinny Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
but like dark brown, like poop.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
and then not to cut you off, the following people are in this room. So at this point, we have Jessica. Which, hi, Jessica. How are you doing, Jade? How are you doing, Jessica? Kay and Reese are all in this room. Yes. Jessica just runs in. Simone is no longer in the equation.
She's not? I thought she was there.
She's not in the room. She wasn't in the room at all.
Good.
She left during the book cafe
stuff. Good. Great. That's sad. I feel bad because I just assumed she was there with them.
Nope, she wasn't. That's why I just
she said what? She when she heard that Miguel wanted to go back to hell, she said, "This is some bullshit."
She's like, "I'm out of here." She's like, "I am head out." So
she said, "Let me go see if my parents miss me."
And that kind of was where like, oh, maybe at that point that's where they're starting to think about recasting Simone's, because like she's not even in the Bennett house.
No, you know what though? It's a solid character choice for me. Like, no, Miguel says he wants to go back to hell. No, I'm not going back to that hell house.
Bye.
No, I'm out. Count me out. So yes, all those people are in the room. The thing starts eating Miguel, and then it like punches Reese across the room. It is at this point that Sam and Grace, which Grace had been having a really bad feeling that something bad was happening in her house, and Sam's like, look, the house is fine, no, there's nothing wrong here, and they walk in the house and there's nothing wrong, and then they hear the kids screaming and they dash up the stairs and see that they dash into this scene. This hellish scene. And man, oh man, this is when, and I'm so glad that they finally have witnessed hell. This is when the angel appears to Grace again, because she's like, what can I do? The angel appears to Grace again, and she tells her to use her powers. She says, you need to use your powers, Grace, but she doesn't tell her how, because she's useless. But then she says, look inside your soul, Grace. And that's all she says to Grace. And then Grace does start to feel her power. She's like, I do feel something. I do feel it. I feel my power.
And meanwhile, in the background, Jessica's like, who are you talking to?
Yeah, that was hilarious. No, yeah, that's another thing. The angel appears to
Angel so appears to
only appears person. To Grace. Why not to everybody? Why not to everybody at this point? You know, what's the secret you're trying to keep? But anyway, Grace is feeling her power and she starts to glow bright golden, right?
Well, the angel kind of went.
Well,
not yet.
First, Grace starts to glow. She starts to glow, and then the angel turns into a ball of light, and then she also, like, I think she lends Grace some power.
Lends Grace some
power.
So
she goes into Grace. But Grace was on her own. in her own right was glowing golden, like a golden light. And the golden dawn. And then she goes, the angel goes into Grace, and Grace starts like throwing light at this. She calls it a serpent. So y'all, it's a serpent, right?
It's
so
a serpent.
She takes her hand and she throws light at this serpent, and she starts yelling. She goes, "Demon, be gone! Leave be this gone, place! Demon. Return to hell! Leave this place!" And the demon starts shooting fire back at Grace out of its mouth. So at this point, I guess it had dropped Miguel out of its mouth so it could shoot the fire. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Because it also grabbed Sam and was like choking Sam with its arms, with its skinny little arms. And so she's keeps saying, "Demon, be gone, leave this place." The demon shoots fire at Grace, but she blocks it and commands it and says, "I call upon the fires of heaven to send this serpent back to the fires of hell. Be gone, instrument of evil. Leave this place."
The writers were definitely feeling themselves this week.
It fucking worked, and it was so good, man. I was screaming at this. I was so excited. I love this, especially
this
considering
is what Passions is.
Yes, especially considering how boring the first three episodes were.
Oh yeah.
Like when this finally started happening, it was like, thank God, finally something. But also, like the something that happened was really cool and really like crazy and really exciting. So. The angel comes out of Grace and tells Grace, "There are many more battles ahead of you." And then she leaves.
Peace is out. Bye.
And that's it. And everybody's looking at Grace like, what the hell was that? And Grace is like, I'm not sure. And that's where we end it this week. Yeah.
That's it. And that makes me want to watch more now.
I know. Ugh. All right. Yeah. It actually like made me like, okay, I gotta watch the next week. Like I can't, I'm actually excited to get started on the next week. Cause honestly, I was kind of dreading these episodes cause I knew they were going to be kind of boring. And then my suspicions were confirmed as I watched them, but they got so much better. So, but everything can't just be crazy all the time. I know the recap, especially for the format that this was, it's completely necessary, the recap is. So I get it. I can't be mad at it, but like, Jesus Christ. So that's it for the week, everybody. Remember, you can always catch me on social media. I know I'm not very active, unfortunately. I want to be. I do. I'm just really busy with my actual job and then with Passions, you know, other stuff is social media. I'm just not good at social media. I'm just going to put it out there. I'm bad at it. So, but you can catch me on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter at Passions Podcast or at Passions or at Podcast Passions, I think. Just search Passions Podcast. You'll find me. Send me an email, passionspodcast@gmail.com. And again, if you want to become a patron, which I would love some more patrons, please check that out, patreon.com/passionspodcast. We're gonna be having a watch party at the end of the month. I want to do Halloween's the 31st, which is on a Monday, so I kind of want to do a Passions Halloween party, like a virtual dress up. You could either dress up as a Passions character or just anything, you know, but we'll watch an episode, dress up, have some drinks. Could be a lot of fun, I think. So I'll be doing that for the patrons. So go sign up. All right. And Angel, you want to give us your socials one more time?
Yes. So I am at Tornado Song on Twitter. I am on Angel.Young24 on Instagram.
All right. Thank you very much. And with that, you are my passion for life. Bye.